lead us to the end of this type of tragic news and lead to a real unity of our people, which ultimately will lead to the Geula Shleima. We want to thank a number of people who have generously sponsored today's program, beginning with breakfast, a nice breakfast this morning, and the shiurim and the refreshments later on. I want to thank Debbie and Shelley Green, in memory of Debbie's father, Avram Ben Shmuel, Esther and Simeon Schwartz, in honor of Eli Safta, Chana Naomi Bat Elchanan, and Avram Ben Yosef, Abuelito Avram Ben Yosef, as well as Avi's engagement, Avi's here. Al Yishama Bar Yehuda Chutzis Shalayim. I want to thank Debbie and Howie Shub in honor of their sons, Josh and Daniel. Irid and Thomas Rockman in memory of Esther Tzibia Bat Fega. Also want to thank Paul and Aviva Rolnick in honor of Eitan and his friends and the entire Torah Shraga Teva this year. And also to Mrs. Miriam Feller in honor, in memory of my father, Shmuel Abba, Ben Meir. We have a fantastic lineup today. And to kick it off, we're very excited to have Rabbi Aaron Goldscheider, who previously was rabbi in Jacksonville, Florida, and Mount Kisco, New York. Now is living here in Israel with his family, came to live here a couple years ago, and continues to make an impact on Jewish people. Last year put out a sefer, Haggadah, based on teachings of Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Shlomo Kalibach. And we're very excited. Very excited for him to address the topic of from Ava to Achva, how can we unify our people? Bakasha.
Good morning, everyone. Kodesh Tov. And thank you very much for having me. And it's a pleasure to be here. My Yasher Koach, Rav Olshin, and to Rabbi David. Thank you for hosting me. It's very special for me to be back here in this yeshiva. I still think of this as BMT, as Beis Medrash HaTorah, where I studied in 1984, going back a few years, and where there was just one payphone here on the outside, and we walked around with our asimonim, those that remember what those are, and we called home once a month for 5 minutes or so to speak to our parents and to say hi. And I noticed that things are a little bit different today, that everyone has their own phone in their pocket, and that things have changed. But this is a very, very special place, and you should appreciate this yeshiva that you are in, these very hallowed walls, very holy, a holy setting. I have a karsa tov to Rebbeim of mine that are Baruch Hashem that are still here, Rav Miller, Shlita, and Rabbi Rav Kefet, and others, and you should take advantage of speaking with them and meeting them and getting to know them. The topic this morning of Ahavat Yisrael, of our relationship with others and with the Jewish people, is a very important topic. Thinking about my years in yeshiva, I don't remember setting aside time for this or spending a morning or spending a day talking about this issue, what it means to fulfill this mitzvah, the responsibility of Ahavat Yisrael, of love for our fellow Jew and for our fellow person. And I think it's wonderful that that is something that is being addressed this morning. And as we know from Chazal, our rabbis tell us, Rabbi Akiva Omer Zed Kal Gadol B'Torah, that this is the most important principle in the entire Torah, the Ahavta L'Re'acha Kamocha, the love that we are to have for one another. So it's something that we certainly need to study, it's something that we need to analyze, and an area that always needs chizuk, that we can strengthen this area of our Avodas Hashem, the way that we relate to one another. As Rabbi Olshan mentioned before, I had the great honor, the schus, to put together, to compile a Haggadah with three unique personalities, highlighting the teachings of three great rabbis, Rabbi Abram Isaac HaKohen Cook, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach. And I believe that all of them had a great impact on the Jewish world, especially over the last 100 years. And for us, in terms of our Judaism, the way that we express our Judaism, I believe that these personalities are very important personalities for us. And I'd like to look at these personalities, look at some of their teachings, some stories from these great rabbis, and in that context, to look at the relationship and the responsibility that we have towards our fellow Jew and towards our fellow person, and to look at this issue and to begin to address the issue of Ahavat Yisrael. And we're sitting right now in what I would call the spiritual home of Rabbi Soloveitchik. From what I understand, this building was built for Rabbi Soloveitchik, for Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik Zatzal, that he would come and teach here in this setting. And if you want to learn more about the history, you can speak to Rabbi Rekefe, but there is a history here of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that this would be a place for his learning, for his teaching. So I'd like to begin with a teaching of Rabbi Soloveitchik, and to look at something that we are in the midst of in terms of Kriyas HaTorah, in terms of the Torah readings of these Shabbatot that we're in right now, and that is the story of Mitzrayim. And we know the story really begins with the Sned, with the burning bush. And as we know, Moshe sees the burning bush, he sees a bush that is on fire. And the question is, what is the symbol? What is he to see in that burning bush? And why does God reveal to Moshe Rabbeinu his presence through a bush that is on fire? And according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, one of the messages, and the important message that Moshe is to see in the burning bush, is that there is a fire inside of the bush that Rabbi Soloveitchik points out does not spread to the entire bush. There's a fire inside. And what Moshe Rabbeinu is to see, what he is to appreciate, is that there is a fire that exists within the heart and within the soul of every Jew. And that Moshe didn't necessarily recognize that he had his doubts about the Jewish people, if it was possible for the Jewish people to follow Moshe and to follow God and to leave Egypt. And he had his doubts. And therefore God said, look at this. Look at the symbol of the Jewish people. And that is that within every Jew, within every Yid, that there is a fire that burns at the core, at the center. The Labat Esh, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, the word Lev. The word Lev is found within that word Bilabat. And Lev within the heart of the Jew is a yearning for God and a closeness to God. And therefore I'm sending you down to Egypt to speak to the Jewish people, to care for them, and to help them make their way outside of Egypt. And we know that there are signs that Moshe Rabbeinu receives there as he's standing in front of the Sned, that the staff turns into a snake, and the leprosy that is found on his hand. And according to a number of the Mefarshim, the symbol of the snake represents Lashon Hara. It's the snake that seeks evil at the beginning of the Torah, at the very start of the Torah. The leprosy also, as you know, represents the tzaras of Motzi Shemra. And that Moshe Rabbeinu may be guilty to some degree of Motzi Shemra and Lashon Hara, of not having the optimism, not having the hope, not having the confidence in the Jewish people, in the fellow Jew, the kind of confidence that he should have. And therefore, this is the message of the Sned, of the fire that burns within the Sned. There is another very beautiful interpretation there Rabbi Soloveitchik offers in looking at the episode of the Sned, the burning bush. And there's a new Chumash that just came out, the Seres Harad Chumash, which is a very, very beautiful Chumash by Arno Lustiger, who has put together the teachings of Rabbi Soloveitchik. It just came out on Shnos, and I recommend that you take a look at that, that you purchase that. And within the story of the Sned, as Moshe is approaching the Sned, the Pasuk says, "Vayaster Moshe Panav." It says that he hid his face. That he hid his face from the snag. He turned away, that he didn't look directly at the snag. And the question is, why does he not look at the snag? Why does he not look at the burning bush? According to some Mefarshim, it may be that he was seeing the revelation of God, that he was seeing a vision of God. It was maybe too difficult to look at that, that he couldn't look directly at that. But Rabbi Soloveitchik offers a different interpretation. And that is that at that moment, Moshe Rabbeinu had the opportunity to see everything about God, that God was willing to reveal everything, all of life, everything that happens in life, all the questions, all the difficulties, to understand everything that happens to every human being, that were Moshe Rabbeinu to look at the revelation directly at God, that he would understand everything that happens in the world, that he would understand Tzadik Diralo, our righteous people, suffer. He would understand pain and suffering of people, and what the master plan is of God, if only he would look. But it says, Vayaster Moshe Panav, that he looked away, that he hid his face. And the reason for that, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, is that Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to look directly at the snare. He didn't want to look directly at God's revelation. Because if he were to understand and to see why Tzadik Diralo, why righteous people suffer, to understand pain and suffering of every person, Moshe Rabbeinu thought to himself, maybe I won't have the compassion and the sensitivity that's necessary that I should have for my fellow person, for my fellow Jew. I don't want that revelation. I don't want to see everything because that may affect the way that I'm going to relate, the compassion that I'm going to have. I may have a little bit less compassion for somebody because I know the real reason why a person suffers. And Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to see a little bit less of God, to understand a little bit less of the divine, in order to be a person of greater compassion and greater sensitivity to his fellow Jew. Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach tells the following teaching from the Rebbe of Alexander, the Alexander Rebbe. And the Alexander Rebbe taught his students, taught his Hasidim, that every midah, that every characteristic that a person has, in every way you can serve God. Even those things that you generally don't, would not consider to be positive things or a way to serve Hashem. Anger that a person has. So there is also a way to do that l'shem shemayim. There's a place for anger against our enemies when we have to stand up for something. There's a place for that. Jealousy, generally not a good thing. But there's a place for that. That can be done l'shem shemayim as well. Kinat sofrim. That if there's the idea that it's a positive thing that there's some jealousy between people when it comes to learning Torah, that you want to strive in learning, that you want to accomplish. So the students said to the Rebbe of Alexander, they said, but we don't understand, there's one area that there can't possibly be a place for it to be l'shem shemayim. And that is for a person to be an atheist. How is it that a person who rejects God, an atheist, how is there that midah, how is there a place for that within Avodas Hashem in terms of serving God? So the Rebbe turned to his Hasidim and he said, there is a place for that. When a person asks a favor of you, when a person is in need, at that moment you should be an atheist. You shouldn't say God will take care of that person. You shouldn't go and daven for that person and leave it to God to take care of that person. At that moment, you should be an atheist. It's not about God. It's about yourself, what you can do for the next person. Don't even leave it up to God to do it. You have to do it on your own. When we think about this topic of Ahava Israel, I think many of us would think about the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos of Eidanis Kol Adam L'Kafsus, to see every person in the best light. Eidanis Kol HaAdam, not every person, Kol HaAdam, the entire person, to take into account the entire person, the entire personality, his background, where he comes from, what has possibly happened to him throughout his life, to take that into account when you meet a person, the relationships that you have with people. And there is a personality within our history over the last 100 years Rabbi Abram Isaac HaKohen Cook, Rav Cook, the first chief rabbi of Palestine, of Israel. And he was known for this great Ahabat Yisrael, the love that he had. And he said that you have to find a way, just like in learning, that in a difficult sugi, you have to find an answer. He says so too with the Jew, that you have to search. You have to look for the goodness in the Jew and to see and to highlight the best in every person. 100 years ago this year, Rav Kook set out on a mission, a Masa HaTshuva, that he went to the small communities up north, and he didn't wait for the Jew to come to him. He went to the street. He went and traveled together with other rabbis. He initiated a trip in which he would go to different moshavim and kibbutzim and communities and begin to teach, to try to reach out to those that were not committed. In those days, 100 years ago, the chalutzim were not just people that were not committed. These were against the tradition, against the Torah, against God. And there are many people that were not in favor of the actions of Rav Kook. They felt that he was too open, that he was too embracing. A sefer that he wrote called Orot, which means lights. In that book, he wrote what for some was considered to be very controversial, in which he spoke about the greatness of the Chalutzim, those that were settling the land of Israel. He spoke about the greatness of tzaddikim, of righteous people that keep the Torah, that keep Taryag Mitzvah, but there's also greatness in the Chalutzim, in the pioneer of the non-religious or not yet religious Jew who cares about the land of Israel, cares about the people of Israel, that they're doing something unique and something very, very important, something that is very holy. And in one of his very beautiful statements, Rav Kook says, and I'm sure it's a statement you may have heard, he said, just as the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, says the Gemara, because of Sinat Chinam, because of hatred, unwarranted hatred, hatred that was unnecessary, so too the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt because of Ahava, through Ahavat Chinam, through unwarranted love, extra love, abundant love, Ahavat Chinam. So that's one of the great teachings, the idea that we not only care for, but says Rav Kook, that we have to express a great love, an abundance of love. There's a beautiful sefer that is also, I'll recommend, called The Tzaddik in Our Time. The Tzaddik in Our Time is a sefer that was written about Rav Aryeh Levin, and he was known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. And his grandson gives tours today. He's the head of Gesher Institute, and he gives tours of the area and the home of Rav Aryeh Levin, which is right near the Machane Yehuda, right in back of that area. And in that sefer, towards the end of the sefer, he brings a number of teachings from Rav Kook. And Rav Kook says that Rav Aryeh Levin said that he would often make this remark. He said, "I'd rather be mistaken and be too loving of Jews than to be mistaken and not be loving enough. I rather on a Yom HaDin, on my Day of Judgment, when I stand before the Creator of the world, I rather Hashem say to me that I was too loving of Jews, that I sinned in being too loving of Jews, than Hashem say to me that I sinned in not loving Jews enough." They were good friends with one another, Rav Aryeh Levin and Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook. And they shared this trait, this beautiful quality of love and abundance of love, Ahavas Chinam, the love that they had for Jews and for their fellow people. And just one story from Rav Aryeh Levin. Rav Aryeh Levin was the rabbi of that area, again, right in back of Machane Yehuda. If you ever have the opportunity to take a tour of that area and to see that, to see some of the history of Rav Aryeh Levin, it's very worthwhile. And he was the rabbi there, and he tried very hard to have Shmirah Shabbos, that everybody in that area, that all the stores would be closed on Shabbos. That every makolet and everyone that was doing business, although not everyone was religious, he was making an effort that there should be the right kind of atmosphere on Shabbos, that stores should be closed. And the story goes that there was one fellow in one store that refused to close his store on Shabbos. And he said, "Rav Aryeh Levin, it's not something that I can possibly do." And Rav Aryeh Levin again and again tried to convince him, and again tried to spread the word that this is the kind of atmosphere that we want to create in our shuna. One Friday night, Rav Aryeh Levin was making his way out of his house, making his way towards the shul. But people noticed that he didn't make his way all the way to shul, but he took a detour, and he went to that store on Friday night. The Shabbos had already come in. His davening had started already in the shul in the Beis Knesses. Rav Aryeh Levin went to the store, and he walked into the store, and he sat down, and he just sat, and he sat quietly, and he watched as people came into the store and were buying things on Friday night. After Shabbos, Rav Aryeh Levin came over to the owner of the store, and he said to him, "I now see how difficult it is for you to close your store on Friday night. I see the business that you do. I see the number of people that come into the store and are making purchases on Friday night. I understand for the first time how difficult it must be for you to close the store." The following Shabbos, the store was closed. With that kind of sensitivity that Rav Aryeh Levin had, to go to the store and to see and to put himself in his friend's shoes and to see how difficult it is and to express that had a tremendous hashpa. There's another area of ahava when we talk about ahava, when we talk about love. There's Ahavat Yisrael, but there's another area that I believe these personalities in particular highlighted. And I'd like to begin with the first Jew, Avram Avinu. And we know that Avram Avinu, his name changed. His name was Avram, but his name changed to Avraham. And a letter He was added to his name. Why was the letter He added to the name of Abraham? So there are different interpretations. But according to the Pasuk, the Pshat, it appears that the reason why the He is added is because Hashem says to him, "You will now be Av Hamon Goyim." That you're now not going to be only the father of the Jewish people. You're not only going to be an inspiration for other Jews, but you're going to be an inspiration for the entire world as well. Av Hamon Goyim. You're going to be the father of many, many nations, of all people. And we have the tradition also, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos, that they become Midav Shel Aaron, to be of the students of Aaron, Oev Shalom, Barodeh Shalom, Oev Es Avrios, and the Karvan, the Torah. Speaks about Aaron as somebody who loved peace, somebody who loved people. And it says specifically, it says, Ohe de Sabrios, that he loved all of God's creations. He loved every person. And the story from the Gemara in Shabbos that you're familiar with, of Hillel, of the great Hillel, where the convert wants to come and join the Jewish people, and Shammai has one response, and not a very open, not very embracing response, but the response of Hillel to the Gentile is to come. Is to come and find your way amongst the Jewish people. Rabbi Soloveitchik has the following teaching. He says that in Hebron, as we know, is a holy place, the second holiest place for a Jew, Yerushalayim, being the holiest place, the Beis HaMikdash, the Kodesh HaKodashim. The Hebron is the second holiest place because of those that are buried in Hebron, the Avos, the Imaos. And again, I'd recommend those that have the opportunity this year to go and to daven in that place. It's a very, very special place to daven and to be. Rabbi Soloveitchik says that it's holy not only because of the avos and the imos that are buried there, but there are others that are also buried in the cave of Machpelah as well. Okay, we have the head of Esav. But there are two others that are also buried. I'm not sure if you know that. Two others that are buried in the Maarat HaMachpelah. A Tradition tells us that Adam and Chava are also buried there. And it could be that that's why Abraham chose that place. He knew that that was the burial place of Adam and Chava. And says Rabbi Soloveitchik that there is great symbolism, a great teaching there, and that is that the Jewish people, our concern is not only with the Jewish people, our fate and our destiny are not only with the Jewish people, but it's with all of mankind, and it's with all of humanity. We care about everyone. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a beautiful teaching in which he compares Pesach and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur and Pesach. And you don't usually think about those two things together. But he says there's something in common, something very significant in common in those days. And the way that we end Yom Kippur and the way that we end Pesach. Yom Kippur, at the end of the day is coming to the end. We read from the book of Yonah. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, why is it that we read Yonah? Because Yonah is a story not about the Jewish people. It's a story about Gentiles, about Nineveh, about a Gentile world that is doing tshuva. It says Rabbi Soloveitchik, because as Jews on Yom Kippur, we're not only concerned with our own tshuva, and we're not only concerned with the tshuva of the Jewish people, we want tshuva for all of mankind. So as the day is coming to an end, that's where our minds and that's where our hearts are, with a hope and a prayer that everybody finds their way back, that everyone finds their way back to the source and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on Pesach as well, as we come towards the end of the Seder, we have the paragraph of Nishmas Kol Chai. Nishmas Kol Chai, the neshama of all Chai, of every living being. That every person has a neshama, every person has the desire to return to be close to Hashem, to be close to God. Says Rabbi Soloveitchik, both days end in a similar way, in a very powerful way. And that is that we're praying for Geula, we're praying for redemption of all mankind, our hopes and our dreams of Jew and non-Jew coming together. What we can do as a Jewish people to affect the world and to inspire the world. Rav Kook quotes a Gemara in Brachos, and also a very beautiful sefer called Einaya, which is a very important work, which is Rav Kook's commentary to the Agadita in Brachos and in Shabbos, Gemara Brachos and Gemara Shabbos. Rabbi Danny Mann has a regular piece each week, a translation of one of the pieces from Einaya online. Rav Kook quotes the Gemara in Brachos that says that when you daven, you have to daven in a room that has windows. And it's brought the halacha, it's brought in the Rambam, in Hilchos Tefillah and Perikei. The halacha is that you're supposed to daven where there are windows. I was in a shul recently in Chicago, Rabbi Shannan Gelman Shul. We just built a gorgeous shul. At the front of the shul, there are 12 windows that one looks at, that one looks out to as one davens. And that's the halacha. It's a question how many windows, different minhagim, but that one should daven in a room with windows. So most of the Farshim say that the reason for that is Yirat Shemayim, that you're going to look out the window, that you're going to see the heavens, that you're going to be reminded of Hashem, of Kisei HaKavod. Rav Kook, in his explanation, says the following. He says that you can't daven appropriately, you can't daven correctly, in the most ideal way, unless you also have within your davening a concern for all people and for all men. And you care not only for yourself, and you care not only for the Jewish people, but that you care for all of mankind. I want to share with you a story, which I'm going to read the story because it's written so beautifully. This is the great Sefer, Holy Brother. And once you have learned Mesilas Yesharim, this is the next Sefer after that. This is a story that, by the way, it's written by Yitta Halberstam, who is a Hasidish woman. She lives in Brooklyn. She wrote another book called Small Miracles, which sold 3 million copies in America. And she wrote stories about Rav Shlomo Carlbach. And this is one of my favorite stories from this book. By the way, we know Rav Shlomo Carlbach was a great songwriter. Many of the nigunim that we have today, some of the most beautiful nigunim are from him, also a great teacher of Torah. And he also lived the life of great Ahava Yisrael and Ahava for all people. So let me share the following. Very few people were aware of this particular dimension of Rabbi Shlomo Carlbach's work. Reflect Rabbi Tzvi Mendel, spiritual leader of Brooklyn's Kahal B'nai Yisrael. But he routinely visited inmates, both Jewish and non-Jewish, in prisons all over the world. Wherever he happened to be, he tried to visit local prisoners, whether they were confined in a huge penitentiary or humble village jail. Occasionally he would encounter a Jew or two, but more often than not, he wouldn't. Who has compassion upon prison inmates? There are squadrons of well-wishers visiting the sick and lonely in hospitals, in nursing homes, and senior citizen centers. But when was the last time you heard about Good Samaritans organizing to visit prison inmates? They are among the most abandoned and forlorn people in the world. But Shlomo Carlbach didn't forget them, and he had compassion. About 2 years ago, I had the privilege of accompanying Shlomo to a prison in upstate New York. This time, he had actually been invited by the Jewish chaplain, who asked that he perform a Hanukkah concert for the Jewish inmates there. There weren't many there, not even a minion, only about eight. There was no payment involved, but Shlomo accepted the invitation without a moment's hesitation. It was a schlep, 3 hours each way. No problem, said Shlomo cheerfully. The concert was a huge success, and Shlomo made the event a real Hanukkah celebration, but that was only the beginning. When the Hanukkah Chagiga was over, Shlomo turned to the chaplain and said, "Please, I would like to visit with the rest of the inmates here. Could you get permission?" Shlomo went into every cell where he hugged, kissed, and talked with each inmate. Then he went into the dining room, into the recreation room, into the kitchen, into every possible nook and cranny of the prison where he was permitted to go. Not satisfied until he had ferreted out every prisoner, making certain that no one had been overlooked. Finally, he was ready to leave, and we were walking down the hall when a big, black, burly inmate with a scarred, pitted face started running after us. "Rabbi, Rabbi," he shouted, "please wait." We stopped immediately, and Shlomo turned to beam at him. "Yes, my holy friend," he inquired sweetly. The man began to shift in embarrassment, almost as if he regretted his impulsive act, and then, finally, gathering courage, blurted out, "I just loved that hug you gave me before. Would you mind giving me another one?" Shlomo gave him the most radiant smile in the world, and then tenderly enfolded him in his arms. They stood clasped together for a long time. Finally, the inmate broke away and heaved the deepest sigh in the world. "Oh, Rabbi," he said, no one ever hugged me like that before." And then tears began to stream down his face. "You know, Rabbi," he sobbed in remorse, "if only someone would have hugged me like that 10 years ago, I surely wouldn't be here in this prison today." Rav Kook, on our parsha, Parsha's Bo, they're reading the Shabbos, speaks about the Makas Bechoros. And each year at the Seder, and each year as we read about Makas Bechoros, it's something that we somewhat take for granted in terms of the difficulty that it presents. The difficulty that it presents of God smiting the firstborn children and babies and taking them from the Egyptians. And it's a difficult makkah to some degree to understand. And we ask the question, why is it that God chose Makas Bechoros and that as the ultimate, that is the final, as the 10th plague of the final makkah that he brought on the Mitzrayim? And let me just read to you one line from Rav Kook in the Hebrew. Rav Kook says, "V'hutzra hadavar lavo b'tkuna zu shel makas bechoros kidei shetia efsharut lifnot derech laharat or chayei kodesh." purpose of Makas Sechoros was in order to open up the possibility, Efsharut Lifno Derech, to make a new path, the possibility to bring the light of God, the light of holiness. The way that Rav Kook understands this, the way that I understand what Rav Kook is saying, is that the Bechor, the firstborn in Egypt, were the most powerful of all the individuals within the strata of the culture of Egypt. They were the most powerful. They were like the mafia of Mitzrayim. And unless God removed the Bechor, that section, that level of society was not possible. It would not be feasible for Mitzrayim to reinvent themselves, for Mitzrayim to start out on a new path, on a moral and ethical way of life. And it was necessary for Hashem to do that, to take the Bechor, to take that section off, to take that level away in order for the rest of Mitzrayim, for those that were underneath the Bechor, to make their way up and begin to establish a new, wholesome, and healthy society. And what that means is that Hashem and the Torah is concerned with the non-Jew as well. This wasn't just punitive, it wasn't just a way to destroy, to bring destruction to Mitzrayim. What Cook is suggesting is that God was trying to find a way to bring goodness, try to bring a new start, a fresh start to Mitzrayim, and to begin a new society, one that would recognize God and live a life with morality and justice. I'd like to share a story from Rav Shlomo Carlebach. Shlomo Carlebach tells the story of what's called the story that's been called the Karliner Mincha, and it's also found in a beautiful book called Lamed Vav, which is a collection of stories of Rav Shlomo Carlebach. The story of Rav Aaron of Karlin, who was one of the great Hasidic Rebbes. And Rav Aaron of Karlin one day turned to his Hasidim as the day was coming to a close, and he said that it's time to daven mincha. But we're not going to daven mincha here. There's another place that we're going to go to daven mincha. And the students turned to the Rebbe, to Rav Aaron of Karlin, and said, "The day is getting late, Shki is coming. Are you sure that we should set off, that we should make our way somewhere else to daven?" The Rebbe said, "Yes, we must go." So they gathered the wagons and the horses, and they began to make their way through the forest and travel to this place that they would daven the mincha prayer. And finally they come to a little town, and they come to an inn, and there Rav Aaron of Karlin says, "Let's stop. It's here that we're going to daven." And they make their way inside a little inn. And there was an old man there who welcomed them inside. And the Rebbe said, "Can we daven mincha here? Can we use this space to daven mincha?" And the old man said, "Sure." And they began to daven mincha. And the Karliner Hasidim don't daven softly. They daven with a full voice and with a lot of singing and with a lot of movement and with some dancing. And they began to daven this mincha, a mincha with singing and dancing with loud voices. And a very beautiful, beautiful singing, beautiful voices. And the peasants of the town began to hear this, and they heard something special going on. And all the peasants, the Gentiles, they took a little something from their home. They took baskets of fruit, and they made their way to the inn. And there, where they saw the singing and the dancing, together, they started to sing and dance. And the Rebbe took the hand of one of the peasants, and a chassid, one of the chassidim, took the hand of another peasant. They were davening this mincha and singing and dancing together. And this went on for an hour, 2 hours. And finally, the time came where the Rebbe said, "We're going to make our way back home." And the chassidim make their way back to the horses, back to the wagons, and they're about to leave. And that old man that greeted them, the old man that brought them, that escorted them inside the inn, turned to the Rebbe right before the Rebbe was ready to get onto the wagon. And he said to him, "I'm 107 years old. And 100 years ago today, 100 years ago today, there was another rabbi that was here. And the name of that rabbi was the Baal Shem Tov. And he was here with his Hasidim. He also came. And he also daven the afternoon prayer. And the same thing happened. The peasants from the town all came. And they came with their baskets of fruit. And they started to pray. They started to dance together. And the Rebbe said to me, as he was about to leave, he said that 100 years from now, another rabbi is going to come, and he's going to come with his chassidim, and he's going to offer the afternoon prayer, the mincha prayer. And he said to me that when you meet that rabbi, when you see that rabbi, I want you to tell him that we were here before. Make sure to tell him that we davened here, we prayed here, we danced here together before you. That's the story that Rav Shlomo tells. There are different ways of understanding a Hasidic story. Sometimes it's better not to interpret the story. But let me just share one way of understanding or one way that I understand the story. The message of the story is that there was a perfection and there was a unity that existed, that once existed in the past. That is the ideal. That is the way that God hoped and dreamed as He created this world. And we are also told, we are also assured, that a day will come in the future where that will happen again, that there will be a unity, that there will be a togetherness of all people. In this week's Parsha, Parsha's Bo, Rabbi Soloveitchik asks the question, what does it mean when the Torah says the Jewish people sha'al, that they ask gifts from their neighbors? There's a question in the Mefarshim, how to interpret that word, different ways of understanding it. And Rav Soloveitchik says, really the simplest of all the explanations of the word sha'al, it's the way that we would interpret it as well. Sha'al she'ela, which means that they simply asked, that they knocked on the door of their Gentile neighbor, of the Egyptian neighbor, and they said, we're on our way out. Can you give us some gifts before we leave? And the amazing thing is, and one of the greatest miracles, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, of the Exodus, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, was that moment. Was that moment that the Gentile neighbor took gifts, took the gold and silver and clothing, and gave it to the Jew. That they saw the chen, as the Torah says. They saw the beauty of the Jew. They saw the beauty of the Jew, and like the story where the peasants came with gifts because they felt something, they saw something beautiful in the Jew. So too, that's what happened in Mitzrayim. Rabbi Soloveitchik says that that is a paradigm, the Geula Mitzrayim, for the Geula that will take place in the future. And that's our hope and our dream of the unity of the world, of a togetherness, of a coming together, a recognition of the beautiful nature of the Jew, the holiness of the Jew, and that holiness that can spread to all people. Just to conclude, with one other teaching from our parsha, the parsha of this week, of this Shabbos, Parsha's Bo. And it's a teaching from the Mefilta, and it's found in a Rashi, in this week's parsha. The Pasuk says something that is very strange. The Pasuk says, as the halachot of Korban Pesach were being taught to the Jewish people, it doesn't say, Daber, Vayidaber Moshe el Bnei Yisrael. It says, Dabru el kol adapa Yisrael. And Rashi says, quoting the Mefilta, what is the word Dabru? Because Dabru is in the plural. Sounds like that there was more than one person that was teaching the Jewish people. And we know that that's not the case, because Moshe was the teacher of all halacha, of all the Torah to the Jewish people. So what does it mean in the plural that they taught the Jewish people? So let me just read to you the following beautiful words of Rashi. It says the following: Moshe hayachole kavod la'aron, v'omer lo lamdeni. You teach me. The Aaron chole kavod la'Moshe, v'omer lo lamdeni. No, you teach me. V'adaber yotze mibeinehem ilu shnehem midavim. Rashi says the following. Rashi says, yes, it's true. Moshe taught the Jewish people the halacha. But you know what happened before that? What happened before that is that Moshe and Aaron were sitting in the Beis Medrash learning the halacha first before it was presented to Bnei Yisrael. And when they were sitting b'chavrusa, when they were sitting with one another and learning with one another, you know what kind of conversation took place? Moshe said to Aaron, I want you to teach me. And Aaron said, no, I want you to teach me. Moshe said, no, I want to hear your idea. I want to hear your take. And Moshe says, no, I want to hear yours first. I want to hear from you first. And when Moshe finally taught the halacha to Bnei Yisrael, it says, Dabru. Because when the Jewish people heard it, they heard it as if it was coming from both of them, because they heard it from a place of so much love and of so much caring and of so much respect that they had for one another. Now, this morning I spoke about some big ideas in terms of Avat Yisrael, of love of all Jews, of Rav Kook and Shlomo Carlebach, of Soloveitchik. Spoke about a very lofty ideal of a peace that comes to the entire world, a unity that comes to the entire world. But I would suggest, in closing, that the way this is going to happen, the way that we can possibly get to that very hopeful and ideal state, is when it begins to happen right here, and when it begins to happen within a base medrash, when it begins to happen within a family, when it happens between roommates, how we get along with one another, respect that we have for one another. When it happens between chavrusas in the beis medrash, respect for one another. Have you ever said to your chavrusa, I want to hear from you first. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear your take on it before I have anything to say. So we talk about peace in the world, we talk about Ahavas Olam, a love that we should have for all people. So it really begins with each of us and the way that we relate to one another and the care and concern that we have for one another. And to think about, we're away from our family now, but think about the way that we care for our brothers and our sisters, the way that we care for our parents, the respect that we have for them, the way that we relate to them. And if we do this, if we begin to think about this, and this is something that Baruch Hashem, you're taking up this morning and talking about this and beginning to look at it in a deeper way. If we do this on a personal level, then we can hope and strive for that great dream of great Ahavat Yisrael that we all will share, and Ahavat Olam, a love for all people. And please God, unfortunately this morning we heard very sad news, tragic news of people that have been injured seriously, and a war that continues to go on amongst our cousins and ourselves. And please God, we ask for Hashem's help, that there should be no more war, that there should be no more casualties, and a prayer for peace. I wish everyone a Chodesh Tov. It should be a wonderful month, and a special morning of learning for everyone. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Goldschneider. We're going to now split up into four different classes, shiurim, which is going to carry us until about 11:40.